Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. The current protests against the fundamentalist Islamic regime in Iran is history in the making, biblical in its fulfillment. It looks like the Iranian government will soon collapse, and for lack of any better leadership to fill a vacuum, the people are calling for the son of the former Shah, Reza Pahlavi, to be the new leader of Iran. The people of Iran are pulling down the current Islamic Iranian flag and flying the former Persian Iranian flag. The Shah of Iran was ousted in 1979 when Khomeini, a radical religious cleric, convinced the people that all of their problems were due to the current Shah and the westernization of Iran. And hence the nation needed to turn to Islam and to Sharia law. And as is the case in all coups and dictators, Khomeini promised greater freedom, but the oppression under the new Islamic state was far greater than anything under the Shah. The people traded one autocratic ruler for a worse autocratic ruler because the people didn't have a biblical moral compass. And as expected, the people of Iran had to pay a terrible price over the last 47 years. Hosea chapter 4, verse 6, "So you will stumble by day, and the prophets also will stumble with you by night. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge." Now, in the words of Reza Pahlavi, with Iranian resources and her people, she could have become the South Korea of the Middle East, but instead she became the North Korea of the Middle East. The son of the Shah, Pahlavi, was 19 years old when his father was overthrown. The whole family was given refuge in the United States. In the 1979 coup, when the Islamists captured the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, one of the demands of Khomeini was that the United States turn over the Shah so that he could be tried in Iran and put to death. The revolution didn't want the Shah to be a future rallying point for their own overthrow. But in the province of God, that never happened. The Shah of Iran died of cancer a few years later, and the son, who is now 65 years old, has been instrumental in leading a movement among those exiled from Iran to liberate Iran. But now that the Islamic Iranian regime is collapsing, in some way the United States will be working to send the Shah back into power in Iran. This is all in the providence of God. That Islam would take over Iran for 47 years to expose and discredit the religion of Islam. The Iranian people, who are Persian, have now torched more than 60 mosques in Tehran. Copies of the Quran are being burned. And the fastest growing church in the world is in Iran. The church has had to operate underground, so we don't know the exact numbers. But Persians are turning to Christ. And now God is answering their prayer by taking down the Islamic regime. And the people are now ready for deliverance. And it's the providence of God that Donald Trump is now in the White House. Previous administrations all appeased Iran. In 2009, in that Iranian protest, Barack Obama didn't come to the support of the protesters. Instead, he supported the Islamic regime. He even dropped U.S. sanctions on Iran, and we all know about the pallets of cash he had flown into Tehran. Here's a news article from even CBS. Obama administration acknowledges 1.7 billion transfers to Iran in cash. And this only helped Iran secretly fund terrorism with cash to continue its proxy war against Israel and the United States through Hezbollah, Hamas, Syria, and the Houthis. The son of the Shah recently said in a news conference what everyone has been saying, that the Obama administration destroyed any hopes of Iranian freedom by its policies of appeasement. He staves off the fall of Iran for 15 years, which allowed for so much more terrorism in the world. But once Trump came to office, the sanctions were reinstituted. And now President Trump is supporting the protesters, which is inspiring the protesters to continue. Because in previous protests, as soon as the Iranian people realized they had no outside support, especially U.S. support, and that the U.S. would not be sending the Shah back to Iran to lead the country, they realized that their revolution was doomed. And hence, thousands of Iranians were put to death by the Islamic regime in their failed revolution. But Trump comes into office and he renews the sanctions on Iran, and now he's supporting the Iranian people. And of course, the spin put on it by Al Jazeera and Western leftist media is that Trump is actually hurting the Iranian people. But the sanctions are exactly what the Iranian people want, because all of that oil money isn't going to the people, but it's being taken to prop up the Islamic regime in Iran. Last week, Trump greatly helped the Iranian people by posting on social media, quote, "Iranian patriots, keep protesting. Take over your institutions. Save the names of the killers and abusers. They will pay a big price. I've canceled all meetings with Iranian officials until the senseless killing of protesters stops. Help is on its way. MIGA. Make Iran great again. President Donald Trump." And over the last weekend, Trump announced that it's time for new leadership in Iran. And for a U.S. president to make that statement is very significant. And of course, the response from Iran is not to blame themselves for the protests of the people, but to blame the United States and Israel as if this is some sort of CIA coup. Also, the response from leftist media in the West is that Trump doesn't have a constitutional right to support the overthrow of the Iranian government. There were all sorts of calls for Trump's impeachment last summer when Trump bombed Iran in the 12-day war. The left wants to return to the policy of appeasement rather than helping the Iranians overthrow their evil government. Now, biblically, does one country have a right to help overthrow the government, an evil government, of another country? Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 8, "If you see oppression of the poor and denial of justice and righteousness in the province, do not be shocked at the sight. For one official watches over another official, and there are higher officials over them. After all, a king who cultivates the field is an advantage to the land." So God divided up the nations at the Tower of Babel to be a check against worldwide monopoly on power, and also be a check against evil nations. Therefore, nations do have a responsibility to stop evil abroad, as long as the intent is not on creating an empire. And even the left agrees with this when they do it. But when Donald Trump does it, it's Trump derangement syndrome. So right now, the U.S. Abraham Lincoln carrier strike group is leaving China, the China Sea, for Iran. Other military assets are also being moved into place. The U.S. is in a very precarious position. They don't want to be killing Iranians, and it's very difficult to do pinpoint strikes on the Iranian leadership. And the U.S. doesn't want to feed into the Islamic lie that this is a coup orchestrated by the United States. So my guess, and take that for what it's worth, is that the first thing the U.S. is going to do is cut off the Strait of Hormuz so that no Iranian oil can be exported. Stop the oil, and the Iranian regime has no money. The economy in Iran has already come to a halt. People are bunkered down. They're not going to work. But the Revolutionary Guard is still running the oil operation. To control the Strait of Hormuz, it's going to take a lot of U.S. firepower because it's highly protected by Iranian military assets. Other than that, there's not a whole lot the U.S. can do militarily to take down the Iranian regime. At some point, I imagine they're going to have to fly the Shah into Iran and give him some military protection. Also note that right now we're hearing in the media that the protests have died down and that Trump has changed his mind about intervening. But much of that is Islamic propaganda being spread to the West to discourage the Iranian protesters. And there's a great biblical lesson in all this. Few people in Iran want to stand up against the evil of the regime, because if you stand up and speak the truth and nobody's behind you, you're going to be killed. So nobody wants to stand up unless they're sure everyone else is going to stand up with them and that they will be assured victory. Otherwise, it's a death sentence. Like is often said, when you shoot the leader, you better make sure you don't miss. And you don't want to be the first person who stops applauding Stalin. So this creates a great disincentive to oppose evil. You know, in the fairy tale, The Emperor's New Clothes, it would take an innocent child to point out that the king has no clothes. And then when some others start speaking up, then everyone begins to speak up. That's the classic story illustrating this phenomenon. The point is that people will often put themselves before truth. And we've seen that recently in the COVID scare. And this reluctance to stand up is understandable. As Jesus said, we must be as wise as serpents and as harmless as doves. And we shouldn't throw our pearls before swine, otherwise they're going to turn and strike us. Even Jesus didn't go back into Judea until it was his time to go to the cross. But nevertheless, what makes Christians unique is that we put truth above our popularity, above our friends, above our careers, our jobs, even our very lives. And because of that, we change the world for good. While the compromisers and those who appease for the sake of their own welfare actually make the world a worse place. Now, as far as how Christians are to practice civil disobedience in Iran, explaining that could take a whole program in itself. But in short, Christians need to engage in passive civil disobedience, not active civil disobedience. To do no harm, to do no violence, unless they're recruited by the military under the authority of another magistrate, such as the Shah, then under the authority given to the state, Romans chapter 13, Christians then can use the power of the sword to stop evil, and they must use the power of the sword. So for now, the church in Iran would not be throwing, you know, the bricks and burning down buildings, but they can be instrumental in instructing the population in regard to the evil of the false prophet Muhammad and Islam, teaching what is an antichrist government and the consequences thereof. And this lays the groundwork for real change, because it's first and foremost an ideological moral battle. It's a truth war. Now let's get back to the main subject. This revolution in Iran is biblically prophetic. It appears to be part of God's plan to reestablish a nation of Israel for the last days. Zechariah chapter 10, verse 8. I will whistle for them to gather them together, for I've redeemed them, and they will be as numerous as they were before when I scattered them among the peoples. They will remember me in four countries, and they with their children will live and come back. Speaking about the Jews. Last Friday, Reza Pahlavi, the son of the former Shah, the new Shah living in America, gave a news conference, and he stated that the current Islamic regime in Iran does not represent the Iranian people, that the new regime, this regime will fall, and the Iranian people are asking him to help them set up a new government. And the Shah stated that this new government will become a friend to Israel and the United States. And as the Saudis made an agreement with Israel called the Abraham Accords, the Shah wants Iran to create a Cyrus Accord, whereby Iran would be a help to Israel rather than, like the current regime, making their goal the destruction of Israel. So rather than reading his quote, let's hear from the Shah himself.
In a free Iran, our resources and ingenuity will drive prosperity at home and strengthen global supply chains, including America's. A free Iran will be a game changer for peace in the Middle East and for Iran's relations with the United States and the West. The Iranian people love America and hate this regime. After its collapse, instead of death to America, the world will find a nation that embraces America as a true friend. President Trump brokered the Abraham Accords, bringing peace between Arab nations and Israel. I see extending this idea to a free Iran through what we could call the Cyrus Accords, honoring our ancient heritage of tolerance and partnership. The possibilities are endless. The game changer is enough is enough. The game changer is these people deserve better. And they have proven that unlike this regime that hates the Western world in particular, and particularly the United States, that wants to wipe off a country off the map of the world, we as Iranians are committed to a different future. I went to Israel 2 years ago to show that we are the descendants of Cyrus the Great, who 25 centuries ago helped Jewish slaves be freed from the Babylonian government, helped them rebuild their temple in Jerusalem. A country that in the Second World War period gave refuge to Jews escaping the tyranny of Hitler. A country that, unlike this regime, wants to have cordial relationship with the state of Israel and the rest of our neighbors. A country that holds high in our principles and values the first Declaration of Human Rights that Cyrus the Great provided, that was inspiring people like Thomas Jefferson and was encoded into the American Bill of Rights and Constitution or Declaration of Independence. We have pride in that. And the children of Cyrus are not telling you that we are committed to that. That's when I talk about the Cyrus Accords, is in that spirit. This is not me saying it. This is our nation, its culture, its national identity. And this is your truest friend that is now being clobbered, as you saw in that video, by a regime that is un-Iranian and is a threat to all of us. And this is what's at stake, simply, at the end of the day. So it's better for all of us to now think of how different the world will be with a liberated Iran. And this is our moment in time. This is Iran's chance to finally, after 47 years, liberate itself.
Now, what's significant here is that the Shah makes a reference to Cyrus and Persia helping Israel rebuild the temple 2,500 years ago, and that Iran today wants to work in that same spirit. Now, this is a reference to the book of Ezra, and King Cyrus of Persia, Iran, which Israel was under at that time, funding and supporting the rebuilding of the Second Temple in Jerusalem. Ezra chapter 1, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus to rebuild the temple in Jerusalem. And also the prophet Isaiah wrote 100 years earlier, before the life of Cyrus, Isaiah chapter 44, verse 28, "It is I who say of Cyrus, he is my shepherd, and he will perform all of my desires. He will declare to Jerusalem, she will be built, and the temple, your foundation will be laid." Chapter 45, verse 1, "Thus saith the Lord to Cyrus, his anointed, whom I have taken by the right hand to subdue nations before him, and to loosen the loins of kings, to open doors before him, so that gates will not be shut. I will go before you and make the rough places smooth. I will shatter the doors of bronze and cut through their iron bars. I will give you the treasures of darkness and the hidden wealth of secret places, so that you may know that it is I, the Lord, the God of Israel, who calls you by your name." God could have had the Jews solely determine the building of the temple. But it's very interesting and theologically significant that God used a pagan Gentile king to decree and to finance the building of the second temple. Who would have thought, given the separation in the law between the Jews and the Gentiles? But now we have the Shah of Iran ready to come back into power, and he's making reference to Cyrus and the Persians helping Israel rebuild the temple. Could this be some sort of double fulfillment of prophecy in a rebuilding of the third temple, where the Jews are back in the land for a second go-around and a second visitation of God? The rebuilding of the temple in Jerusalem is a major prophetic sign for Christians in the evangelical church, because Jesus prophesied that there would be a future abomination of desolation in the end times, which means a desecration of the temple, yet no temple exists in Jerusalem right now. And Paul writes in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 that the man of lawlessness, the Antichrist, will set up his image in the temple of God. And in Revelation chapter 11, the prophecy is that a future temple is seen and measured. And this description of measuring is always in prophecy, a prophecy of the real thing, not a metaphor. And the text goes on to say that the court of the temple will be tread underfoot by the Gentiles for 42 months. Now, what all this means is debated. But the weight of evidence is toward a rebuilt temple in Jerusalem. And how could that ever take place given the opposition of Islam and the Mosque of Omar occupying the Temple Mount? Something earth-shaking must happen, figuratively and maybe literally, if the temple's ever to be rebuilt. But imagine if Iran, the main sponsor of terrorism against Israel in the Middle East, completely flips and goes on Israel's side. That would be a miracle of God. And in just the same way the people in Ezra's day doubted that the geopolitical politics of the day would ever allow for the rebuilding of a temple in Jerusalem, God flipped the script in Ezra's day to show his power and his hand in Israel's destiny. And God can do that today. Isaiah 44, I am the Lord God. I say that the temple will be rebuilt, and so it will be rebuilt. What is happening in Iran right now is miraculous. And the more one knows the history and the situation on the ground, the more one is amazed over and recognizes the hand of God. Back in 1979, when Khomeini, his revolution overthrew the Shah, Khomeini wanted to ensure that his regime would always be in power. I mean, if he could overthrow the Shah with mass uprising, then someone could certainly overthrow him. So he created the IRGC, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. This was a military over the military. Iran still had its army, its navy, its air force, but the Revolutionary Guard became the secret police, a parallel government over the current government. It was a government of radical Islamists, about 125,000, who controlled the entire Iranian population of 90 million. And the Revolutionary Guard gets the lion's share of government funding. The Revolutionary Guard has all of the weapons. And of course, citizens are not allowed to own guns in Iran. That'd be too risky for a totalitarian regime. 10 years later, Khomeini dies in 1989. And another Islamic cleric takes his place as the spiritual leader of the nation, Al-Kahani. And what he says goes, the president of Iran is just a puppet. The mosque is above the state. Al-Kahani then transforms the Revolutionary Guard into a shadow state and a military elite that controls all of Iran. And it siphons off all of the money from the Iranian people. The Revolutionary Guard formed its own banking branch, its own telecommunication branch. they took control of the oil industry and all infrastructure projects in the state. And all money and all businesses were directed toward the Revolutionary Guard. And then the regime started to use the Revolutionary Guard to start proxy wars against Israel by funding and training Hezbollah, Hamas, and the Houthis. After the Arab Spring in Yemen, Iran took advantage of the power vacuum to create the Houthis with their mission of destroying Israel. And these Islamic groups are not simply aligned with Iran. They were created by Iran, and they are actually the extension of the Revolutionary Guard. They call it their axis of resistance. And Iranian oil confiscated from the Iranian people are paying for all this. If one cuts off the head of the snake, Iran and the Revolutionary Guard, the whole jihadist movement crumbles. Now, there's so much more that can be said about all this, but here's the point. If you're the average Iranian citizen or you're a Christian in Iran, what can you do about all this? You don't have any clout. You don't have the organization because such organizing is illegal. You don't have any weapons. You don't have any money. You don't have the buildings. You don't have the businesses. You don't have the media. There is nothing you can do to stop the evil. You don't have the power. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 1. Then I looked at all of the acts of oppression which were being done under the sun. And behold, I saw the tears of the oppressed. And they had no one to comfort them. And on the side of the oppressor was power. But they had no one to comfort them. So all one can do is turn to God. And if a people turn to God in truth and pray, be assured God will supernaturally remove evil. And there are hundreds of texts in Scripture that point this out, which we don't have time to cover. Now, one might say the protests in Iran erupted because of the economic collapse brought about by Trump's sanctions. Well, who put Trump into office at this time in human history? God. And it wasn't just the sanctions. The final straw was the drought. The people had no water. And that was a problem that the Revolutionary Guard couldn't solve. The drought was an act of God. Isaiah chapter 50, verse 2. Is my hand so short that it cannot ransom? Or have I no power to deliver? Behold, I dry up the sea with my rebuke. I make the rivers a wilderness. Their fish stank for lack of water and died of thirst. One final thought. The collapse of Iran is upsetting the entire leftist narrative of Islam is being oppressed, and Israel and the United States are the oppressors. When the Iranians themselves, who have lived under Islam for 50 years, are saying that Islam is the oppressor and we love Israel and the United States. The fall of Iran threatens the entire leftist narrative against Israel, and the fall of Iran will change the entire power structure in the Middle East. Well, that's all for now. As these events unfold, I'll visit this subject again. Psalm 122:6, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. May they prosper who love you. Thanks for listening. Subscribe, like, share, leave a comment below, and may Jesus Christ reign.